This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to the show that walks you through some fundamental concepts in the social sciences and humanities. Together with Amat Fuad Rahmat, the show tries to reveal how various thinkers have grappled with theories and concepts the better to understand how society works. Each week, we will discuss a classic text or an idea we hope will shed light on the world around you. But this week, we're going to do something slightly different because it's the end of the year, and we're going to do a little navel gazing. In fact, we're going to look at ourselves. We're neither classic text nor a concept key to understanding the world around you. We're trying to understand the world that we are, aren't we, Fuad? Yeah,
the night school world.
And to help us in this endeavor is Ray Langenbach. He's a professor of arts and theory at the University of the Arts, Helsinki, Finland, and also somebody who's been part of this world, Southeast Asia, for the last 20 years. So you know intimately the issues of education and theory and what it means to bring theory into the public realm. Don't you, Ray?
Yeah, so yes, definitely, absolutely.
So, okay. You had taught here too. You had taught Utah, you had taught Sunway.
USM,
and so you know the landscape, the local landscape. The
Center for Advanced Design.
And Singapore, you were in Singapore as well.
So Sharad, maybe just to take us back, since you want to review this, why don't you just tell the audience what prompted you to come up with the idea for this show, and you know, how difficult or easy it was to get it approved.
Well, you know, Fuad, the origins of this show actually are shrouded in mystery by now. I mean, it was a year ago, and it was a conversation we had actually coming out of a public forum or something, and we sat down at a coffee shop, and I said, let's do something on, you know, Malay thinkers, remember?
Right.
And that kind of, the idea was, if we had a show that every week explored the ideas that were coming out of Malaysia, especially in Malay society, we would have an interesting show. But as we kind of worked through that, it sort of developed and it became night school. And it wasn't difficult to get approval because in many ways, I promised that we wouldn't be political in the most obvious and direct way. We promised to be elliptical in our approach to politics, but we would somehow talk about ideas, and that, you know, ideas are related to politics, or politics includes notions that animate it, then of course there's a link, but it's not always a direct link, as you could tell, right? If you listen to our shows over the year.
In many ways, we take a step back from the monotony of everyday headlines to really reflect on implications, on ways to understand the developments, and, you know, potential directions they can take using theoretical concepts.
Yeah, that's
so it's political, yeah, but not, like you say, it's not in the kind of mundane everyday sense we understand politics.
Yeah, my impression also is that, you know, I think that there are a lot of people who feel that they can walk the walk, but, you know, can they talk the talk? Can they make a stance rhetorically for the walk that they're doing? I mean, they have an action, but can they reflect? And so it's, you know, what I hear you guys doing is also it's laying out a process of thinking, as well as you know, talking about particular issues.
Yeah, I also wonder now, Sharap, in this review, perhaps you can also share with us, and I'll do that soon too, what people have said about this show and what you, some of the interesting insights you've gathered. I mean, it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts too, Ray, as an educator.
Well, endless glowing reviews, celebrations, a kind of pat on the back. No, I mean, because there are people who are very supportive of the show. I think there's also those who are critical of it, in the sense that they sometimes feel that it's too much of conversation between us or people in the studio, and we don't include people outside, we do not include people who are non-specialists, that we are not making enough of a bridge, or we're not doing enough to bridge the gap in terms of knowledge, especially now in the vocabulary. So, you know, there are criticisms. Sometimes they, you know, come in the form of humor. You know, I have a friend who, rather a colleague, who says that she will forever remember the word teleological, you know, to the day she dies, just because, you know, it was sort of dropped in one of our conversations. But I do think that we try, and we have tried, and we need to do more to bridge the gap in terms of the vocabulary, the kind of assumptions we make. And what's interesting is that we've had shows like the show about the dialectic, is that we use the word so much, but we took it for granted. And it was only subsequently we thought, hey, maybe it's time that we actually explain these words.
Nine months later, yeah.
Yeah, and we use words all the time. And it's become, you know, I'm sure we're making the word narrative very popular, and we're making the word dialectical very popular, just because we kind of sprinkle
performativity is another one.
Performativity. And I think so between the people who are critical and those who are supportive is this idea that I think they both share is that it's important enough that it should be communicated. You know, so something is being communicated. Maybe we could do it better. I think there's also the question of a certain cachet. And I would be very self-critical about this. And if you remember the conversation we had with Sean Matthews and Raymond Williams and the idea of intellectual leadership, that, you know, what was our role and to what extent were we self-critical about our role as kind of, you know, leaders in that way.
Right.
And, you know, were we going to shy away from that? You know, what was our position on that issue? So
we were talking just a few minutes ago about, you know, what is the role of intellectuals? What is the role of people in media who are working with ideas, not just delivering the news, but actually thinking about the intellectual underpinnings that, you know, that are under the news or under events? Because, you know, people in power are talking about ideas. They're not just carrying them out. And what are those ideas? I remember when the Singapore government began to train people from the special branch, if I'm not mistaken, at NUS in postmodern theory. What are the intellectuals talking about? We need to know. We need to decode.
I mean, I think, in fact, if you look back, the one person we haven't done in any kind of adequate way is the work of Said Hussein Alatas. And his...
did it for racism class. Episode, sorry. Yeah,
but we didn't do it in sense
not,
of...
Not in singular kind of focus.
Yes,
no,
because he, you know, is a sociologist of knowledge and comes within that tradition of looking at the sociology of knowledge. His work, The Myth of the Lazy Native, is extraordinarily important. And I think it's been noted many times. But getting depth in that, into that work. And in there, he looks at intellectual developments in a modernizing Malaysia. And of course, we have works like Revolusi Mental, which is, you know, an attempt to think through or give a kind of intellectual foundation. It, you know, it happened in the early part of the development of the new nation, but I think it's revived during Abdullah Ahmad Badawi's time. But really, you know, Senu's collection is in some ways something that we have kind of overlooked.
Yeah, yeah. Revolusi Mental, just as an aside, that's a terrible book.
A terrible book.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just saying.
Even that should be scrutinized.
Because, it's so the issue isn't really not to say, these are great ideas. It's to say, where do these ideas come from? It's the social location of the ideas that are as important as the content of those ideas.
True.
So,
true.
You know, so those are the kinds of things that we could be reflecting on, you know.
One of the common criticisms that I always get is that this is a very, very niche and small audience. That never mind it being English speaking, urban, and probably liberal.
But that's the whole of BFM.
Yeah, so we're not that exempt. But even our appeal only, you know, cuts out a small portion of that. You know, I don't know. I sometimes worry, you know, as we're doing this, that maybe one day it will occur to somebody at BFM to think, well, you know, if this is a sinking ship, maybe the first program to go will be the intellectual highfalutin one.
BFM is going from strength to strength. So let's put
that rumor to bed now. My point here is that, you know, how do we? It's a problem because we are talking about it's stuff that's pretty much esoteric. You know, even if we do break it down, simplify it. So how do we widen our appeal? How do we popularize this?
Well, you know, the esoteric is interesting because when I think of bookstores and what is shelved under esoteric. It's always the kind of supernatural, mystical, you know, it's crystal balls and stuff. We're not that. I mean, what we're actually trying to explore is the world of philosophy and social theory. This year has been heavily philosophical,
yep.
Partly because you've carried the burden of the shows, you know, and but still, it's not esoteric in that kind of oddball kind of way.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things that we were talking about before was, how education is not picking up the ball. You know, how there's no philosophy course being delivered by the local university. So because education is not stepping up to the line, then it comes to a show like this. But that, you know, is that esoteric, or is that simply, you know, filling a gap that should have been filled, you know, in civil society in a more general way? Mm-hmm. Is philosophy being taught in secondary school? It should be taught in secondary school. This is not something on the side. It's something in the very core of human thinking and human culture.
When the special branch assign our podcast as training for them, then we know we've arrived. That's definitely not esoteric.
Okay, talking about reception. Now, you know, there are groups out there. There's one particular, Buku Jalanan, who are, you know, kind of interested in the show, and they listen to it, and they want to put some work behind it. Maybe you could share that.
Yeah. So over the months, we've generated a small, modest following who are really engaged with our discussions, and they proposed to transcribe and compile some of the key episodes we've done in a sort of greatest hits fashion, but in a way to present it to a Malay reading audience, because they believe that a lot of the stuff we discuss here should get a wider reception. So that's one project that's in the works, however slowly. But that's a testament to the growing need for intellectual discourse among Malaysian youths. Buku Jalanan is just one example of this. There are other groups that are doing the same thing, where they just spontaneously organize meetings to discuss book reviews, to dissect ideas, to present the philosophy of different icons in intellectual history. And they do this in reaction to the things that you mentioned, Ray, the fact that academic discourse institutionally is so monitored that they have they have nowhere else to go but among themselves to get the kind of discussion. I have in mind groups like Universiti Terbuka Anak Muda, Lepak Makassit, which is based in Shah Alam, Dialogue Corner, which is based in UIA, and of course Buku Jalanan has you know, branches all over the country, you know. So this, we are having these discussions amidst this hunger for the kind of discourse that you mentioned, you know, even though if it's difficult, even if it is wrapped in technical language, even if its terminology is foreign to most of them, they feel that they want the challenge, you know.
Yeah, so, and that's the other part of it, you know. I think to answer the criticism, and which I take, you know, quite seriously, that sometimes we don't bridge the gap between us and our audience or listening audience is adequately enough. You know, there is a level of difficulty in the material, and what I've always felt about the show is that it's merely a conversation or an invitation to get people to do the difficult work, and the difficult work is actually the person out there picking up that book because of an idea they're excited by and reading that book. Mm-hmm. And that's where it really happens in some ways. It's not the show. The show really is the kind of song and dance we're doing, you know, to excite people to go out there and buy a book or download it or whatever, you know. And it is difficult. And that's the only way you really get something good. I mean, when you struggle with an idea. Mm-hmm. And often it's in the form of a book and it's a text, right? We don't want to do... And I don't think we have ever aspired to be an executive summary. So somebody can listen to our show and walk off and say, well, now I know Nietzsche or Hegel or, you know, Said Hussein Alatas, whatever it is, or whoever it is that we're talking about. We're not the executive summary.
We just nudge. I think we just do that little nudge to get their to pique their interest. Yeah.
Yeah. We're not even Pied Pipers. But
so I'm also heartened by the two live sessions we had. Maybe after this break, we can talk a bit about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you're listening to Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, Ray Langenbach, and myself, Sharad Kutin. We're doing a kind of look back on night school here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan with Ahmad Fuad Rahmat and Ray Langenbach. He is a professor of arts and theory at the University of the Arts, Helsinki, Finland, which is really far away, but intellectually speaking, not really. Ray, of course, is a longtime resident of Malaysia and has worked in the region for many, many years. We're talking about night school. So it's a bit of navel gazing. And before we got to the break, Fuad, you were saying that you were really excited by the live sessions we did at the Annex for Art for Grabs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were well attended, given that the slot was the less popular one, the noon slot, which the organizers were always cynical about. And the fact that, we rarely interact with our listeners. So we got that chance twice this year. And each time, the engagement, I thought, were very rich and reflective of the kind of discourse we want to encourage.
With that idea, is there a possibility, maybe, as you're talking about the alienation of this kind of discussion, this kind of discourse from everyday life and people in everyday life. I mean, what if you took it into schools or universities? You did more of these live sessions, not in the annex, but in in the educational institution and in other public forums.
Absolutely. I mean, there are many places you can go. I mean, you can think of a theorist and intellectual like Antonio Negri. People like him took theory to factories. Mm-hmm, they worked with the people you least expect to be interested in this stuff, the working class of Italy. And so, I think this idea of the intellectual engaged in society, engaged at particular moments, intervening during crises, these are things that have been done before. They're all there. They're models for us all the time. The Jean-Paul Sartre of the world, the many Asian intellectuals who have, participated in the transformation of their own societies. I mean, I don't think we are leading the pack. I mean, I think in many ways,
I don't think so at all, yeah.
Yeah, we're really looking to them to see, look for opportunities.
Yeah.
Of course, the other thing that, coming back to the question of the live public engagements is that when we tried to structure that, what I think was chief in our minds that we didn't want the debate or discussion to become one of the immediate politics of the time. What we wanted people to do was to focus on ways, fresh and new and critical ways to think about the politics of the time. Mm-hmm. And that's slightly different from kind of weighing in, because everybody can weigh in.
Exactly.
And there's a hell of a lot of coffee shop talk out there. We didn't want to contribute to that type of noise. We wanted to contribute to a slightly different type of noise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In fact, we featured, we always go for variety, right? We featured, during the live sessions, we had somebody speaking from a, quote-unquote conservative Islamic standpoint. We got somebody speaking from a, a queer rights activist standpoint. So not just to expand the discourse, but to also show the richness in... In fact, the last live session we did was a dissection of the conception of human rights, which we often take for granted. And I think after that session, where we featured Panky Tech, Syed Muhyiddin Alatas, and Dian Diana, who all have different takes on human rights, I engaged with some of the audience, and they realized that, human rights appear very complicated to me now, but, I have a richer understanding of what's going on, So... like you said, even if we're not the Pied Piper leading the pack, as long as we can throw a bit of aporia, a bit of wonder out there, a bit of, enrich somebody's inquisitive spirit, I think the ball is really rolling that way. Yeah.
One of the themes that we take up, and we've not dropped this theme, which is the fight against passivity, the idea that we should just allow ourselves to be led by popular culture, led by the government, led by religion and our religious leaders. We've always encouraged the spirit of active inquiry and the spirit of critical thinking. That's in all the discussions we've had, the people that we've talked about, that has been one of the guiding lights. I mean, Ahmad Wahib, in particular, somebody, we wanted, we couldn't actually air it. But I think that was so important to understand that even within his project in Indonesia at a time of great turmoil, that was something that he was encouraging. It wasn't people saying, we want development progress and therefore we should let our political leaders lead. It was somebody who believed in his contribution
to society and its transformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, one of your programs, which has now been distributed in Finland, is the one on Hannah Arendt, because one of our teachers in the program that I'm working in is a philosopher and started the semester talking about Hannah Arendt.
Wow!
But he didn't talk about the Eichmann trial and her stance, her extremely unpopular stance, looking at Eichmann as the banality of evil, as just a person who in a sense was a cog in the machine, who did not take responsibility for that machine and did not take responsibility for his role in it, but simply carried out a very administrative, banal function. That aspect and her defense of that to the Jewish community around her and the Israeli community at that time was that she was talking about the necessity of thinking for oneself. And that's what was transmitted by your program, in a sense, to my students.
Awesome. We've gone international somewhat.
Well, yes, and because we have good friends in high places. And some of the shows that have appeared in terms of what we can tell from podcast downloads, I mean, the more popular shows that have, you know, shows that have been noticed, as it were, The World of What Ifs, Resistance is Futile, A Question of Class, It's All Relative, or Is It? God is Dead, But Who Killed Him? Teaching Transformation, Euthyphro's Dilemma, How Do We Know What We Know? With Said Muhyiddin Alatas. Also Shifting Fact from Fiction, which also features Said Muhyiddin Alatas. The Voices in Your Head and The Question of Race. And these are just some of the shows that
spread, yeah.
That, you know, became popular. If you can tell from podcast downloads.
Sure.
The other thing, of course, is a certain, you know, I still feel that people aren't engaging with us as much as they can, say, on the Facebook page and the like. And it's only things that have a slightly political edge that become, you know, right, a source of great excitement among our listeners. But that's not a problem in itself. I think it's also a growing confidence with the vocabulary, with feeling that you have something to contribute. Because we don't want our listeners to be passive in the face of our explanations or our attempts to think through these issues, right? Ray, you know, you've been a teacher for a long time, and one of your areas of interest is theory. Have you found that it's theory that's the most difficult to communicate? Theory is the one that people are most resistant to because it's somehow about the conceptual and not about the doing or the feeling or the...
Or the practical.
An appreciation.
Theory is a bit intimidating for people because they don't realize that it's actually about a kind of perception. It's based in perception. It's based in seeing and stepping back and seeing oneself, seeing and looking again at the process that we're normally involved in, the processes that we're involved in. So I think that theory itself is frightening in part because we don't have a physical operation that we attach to it, but it's very, very physical act to do this perception of our own thought processes.
But I think especially so in a society like Malaysia, you know, where we're fixated by malls, this idea that...
Well, stop knocking malls.
There is this idea that we must get something in return, whereas theory is, you know, the pleasure largely is for its own sake, right?
But there's also an application of theory, and, you know, and it does, if you kind of, I think, take it on board, if you're really immersed in it, and you kind of, it doesn't, in fact, transform your thought process. I mean, it really does way you look at the world.
It remains in your thought, but we don't get stuff, you know. And I think when there's so much fixation on the practical, that becomes a hindrance towards a appreciation of theoretical discourse. However, you know, like I said just now, that there are indications that things are changing, that the youth now, because of social media, texts are much more easily downloadable, you know, videos are easily shared around, so that it's mushrooming, little by little, this need for theory.
Yeah, and it's theory is really about conversation. Mm. It's about dialogue, and how, you know, when was the last time, you know, that, you know, for most of us that we had a really good conversation, mm. you know, and isn't that an, you know, really important part of pleasure and building relationships with other people? And if you can't talk about deep things, then you're actually kind of staying on the surface and staying in what the media wants us to mm-hmm. to be thinking about, you know, what the advertising wants us to think about, rather than if we're not analyzing the films that we see, if we're not analyzing the, mm-hmm. the music, if we're not analyzing everything, then you know we're actually a very passive recipients mm-hmm. in it.
I think that if there is as it were the payoff is in a transformation, the way you look at the world, the way you do things, that actually is the basis for being a leader in thinking and in the work you do, because it's the people who get at the conceptual who are actually able to change the way they work. If not, then we're just administrators of somebody else's methodology. We're simply following. We're derivative in our approach to culture. They're people who, you know, when they look at art, just want to be copyists. They're not really thinking deeply. And to think deeply, you need to kind of get somewhere that allows you to shift the parameters, you know?
To invent, and not just innovate, but to invent mm-hmm. and to step back and say, how else could this be done?
And then one of the things, because, you know, joining us in these conversations has been, and I'm going to read their names because they really deserve, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Our gratitude, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Fuad and myself, you know, Pauline Fan, Sean Matthews, Chandra Kukudas, Nezia Azmi, Cheryl Hamdan, James Piscatori, Saimuddin Alatas, Bunkia Meng, James Jessadasan, Yin Shao Lung, Dian Diana, Sheikh Yahya Rodas, Tessa Houghton, Derek Irwin, Stephen Mumford, Chris Chong, Stephen Pelagia, and Punky Tech. And all of them have really, and of course, sitting right here, right in front of me, see, this is the other thing. Sometimes, without good theory, you don't see what is right in front of you. So, Ray Langenbach. But, you know, and I hope in the next year we get more people, you know, in the studio talking to us. I mean, I'm really excited because I always feel I learn something.
And the range of perspectives that we have, they're not all academics. You know, some of them are just readers for fun. But they can still present their theories, and they can even, in fact, from those perspectives, show how these theories relate to, you know, more real world scenarios. As you were explaining just now, Ray, talking about looking at things deeper and changing the parameters, one of the things I personally have gained a lot from being a part of the show is the ability to critique religion, using these theories, especially the way in which religion continues to be politicized more and more today. I think this is the rare occasion, the rare space where critical perspectives against, you know, unquestioning piety can really depart.
You know, of course, religion comes to mind when we think of piety, but there are all kinds of other pieties. There are political pieties as well that need to be dismantled. There are ways in which we are so eager for change and transformation that we don't, in fact, question the very mm-hmm. terms which are given to us by political leaders, by political parties, by people out there who maybe, you know, on the face of it, or, you know, are genuine and interested, but we shouldn't take that for granted. And so those political pieties need to be subjected to critical inquiry.
And we've had many guests take us along that route of really unpacking everyday life. Like you said just now, Ray, the value of theory is in uncovering our just day-to-day. It's not really pointing to an ideal world or utopian state of affairs, but just really seeing our everyday motions in different ways, and that's where one of the virtues of theorizing lies.
It's interesting that when there are performance art events in Malaysia, the issue that keeps ending them, which these sort of premature endings to performance art events is usually around the issue of religion and a critical gaze that some of the performance artists have of their own religions. That's what is the, in a sense, the unthinkable, the unacceptable.
The question at the end of the day is whether we've pushed the line or the push the envelope on these questions. Perhaps not. Perhaps in some instances we have. But we really need a community, and a community that has or demonstrates the kind of social and intellectual courage that is necessary to say that despite the attempts to silence speech and, you know, free thinking, that we need to carry on, that we shouldn't be cowed by demonstrations of power by the state and such. Having said that, I think there are also ways that we need to learn to be sensitive and respectful of other people's belief systems. So we can be critical, but this, at the same time, we need to say, well, okay, if somebody else has a position and they will be deeply hurt, it is worth thinking about how do we approach the criticism, how do we couch it, you know, which is not to say that we pussyfoot around or, you know, avoid difficult things, but we need to also learn a certain, there's an, I guess, a kind of ethics involved in thinking through something in a critical fashion.
Or disagreeing,
fashion.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's time to think about the future. It's 2014, mm-hmm. around the corner. Fuad, if we were going to do this differently, if we are going to do this differently, and we can because we are the lords of all we survey, yeah. How will we do it?
Well, I want to work harder on getting discussions about Eastern intellectual traditions, whether it's ancient or modern. I feel that, and this is my bias in training too, it's been very Western-centric. You know, for better or worse. I mean, the canon for social theory begins in the West, although it eventually, you know, flourish to engage with, you know, different corpuses outside and post-colonial theory and so on and so forth. So it's not all bad. It's not the problem is not where it comes from. But I do feel that one of the things that I want to do personally as somebody who works with on this show is to incorporate non-Western perspectives.
What I'd like to see is a more social theory. That was supposed to be my remit, really. But also maybe to tarry a bit into the sciences and looking at where the sciences interfaces with the humanities and the arts, and where, you know, where the science is deeply philosophical in the implications of its, you know, of its findings. So we need obviously to find the right people to do this with us. But I'm sure they're out there. It's a question of ferreting them out. Ray.
You may have done, and I haven't, I've heard only a small proportion of your show, so I don't know to what extent that you've dealt with the philosophy of history and how memories are produced and constructed and what are the philosophical basis of memorialization that happens in society. The other thing is the thing we were talking about earlier, you know, to it would be very interesting to see if you could take this dialogue out into a public sphere and, you know, an event where you actually have some audience interaction in real time and see how that could happen, what would happen in that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. We've only started with Art for Grabs, and I think there the trick is in how we structure the conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, I think initially we thought we would have each person talking different theory, different problem, and then it was like we have a single problem with different theoretical takes on it. All these ways are, you know, ways in which we illuminate both the problem but also the approach. So in using different methodologies or theoretical frameworks, you might actually see a problem differently.
But how about, if you haven't done this, taking a real event that that took place at a certain point in time, and then you get the different views by different members of the public about that, but you also then put a kind of philosophical framework in which to approach it, if that's... Mm-hmm. Not something.
No, absolutely. That. Yeah. That's exactly what I'm suggesting. Is you take a problem, something that's perhaps been controversial, that everybody seems to have an opinion about, and say, "Hey, can we look at this differently?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One other comment I keep receiving. I don't know to what extent this is a problem necessarily, but it's the show is very dude centric, in the sense that there's just a bunch of dudes thinking out loud. I mean, we've had Dia and Tessa, we've had Pauline. But that's about it.
We've had four women out
four
of
women,
the
yeah,
18.
Yeah,
yeah. So 19 guests.
We could consciously try to change that.
Yeah, and it won't be a form of tokenism. It's just
it
a question.
Won't be. Yeah, exactly. It's a matter of diversifying the perspectives. Yep.
Absolutely. So please share with us your thoughts on where night school can go, and you can offer your suggestions on our Facebook mm-hmm. page, which is BFM Night School. You can also write to us at
bfmnightschool@gmail.com.
And you can send us messages via Twitter. I'm on Twitter. My handle is Sharad Kutin. And Ray, do you have a Twitter account?
I do have a Twitter account. I think it's Ray Langenbeck at Twitter. I
mean, whatever. Oh, it's at Ray Langenbeck? Okay. Yes. So obviously you don't use it very often. No. So don't send Ray that. Just interact with Ray on our Facebook page. Because, you know, it's the time for New Year's resolutions, and I don't know if Twitter is one of Fuad's.
No, unfortunately. I don't feel moved to that direction.
Okay,
very good. But I'm on Facebook all the time, so hit me up there.
I'm generally more Facebook also, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, Ray, for being with us and thanks. You know, helping us think through what the future of night school is. You've been listening to Ray Langenbeck. He is a professor of arts and theory at the University of the Arts, Helsinki, Finland. Ahmad Fuad Ramat and myself, Sharad Kutin, wishing everybody season's greetings, a happy new year. This is Night School on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.